Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping.
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Hey, guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind that this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, and welcome back for another episode in my mystery series, where today I want to discuss the still unsolved deaths of couple 24-year-old Julianne Julie Williams and 26-year-old Laura Lolly Winans. It was the 19th of May 1996 when the two decided to go hiking in Shenandoah National Park with their golden retriever Taj, but they never came home. Laura Winans was known as Lolly to pretty much everyone. She was the daughter of a wealthy family from Grosse Pointe, Michigan, but despite her privileged upbringing, friends describe her as incredibly down to earth. She loved microbrews, smoking, and a party. She was a free spirit who never felt like she fitted in the stuffy surroundings of her childhood. After graduating high school, she enrolled at Sterling College in Vermont, a tiny college which, according to their website, is an experiential, intentional learning community immersed in social justice, sustainable food, ecological thinking, and action. Lolly loved the outdoors and nature and probably thought that this would be the perfect fit for her. At Sterling, you'd spend most of your time outdoors, building barns, looking after animals, and there's even an annual 5-day winter trek through the Lowell Mountains to test survival skills and group bonding. It was difficult, but one of Lolly's classmates and friends would later say to Barry Yeoman for Out magazine, "One thing that impressed me about Lolly was this outgoing energy that would emerge when everyone else was feeling down." Apparently, she was a really naturally funny person and she valued friendship above everything else. She had an understanding of people, always knowing who was upset, and she always understood why. Lolly had had her own share of pain in life after apparently being sexually abused by a trusted adult as a child, and this would affect her later years at Starling. She started to form a problem with alcohol and eventually decided it was best to just drop out of college. Over the next few years, she would briefly end up engaged to a man, she worked a number of different jobs, and even took in a teenage sex offender in an attempt to overcome her own abuse and trauma. But then she began therapy to work past her trauma and work towards the rest of her life. Perhaps as a result of this therapy, in 1994, Lolly realised that Vermont wasn't the place for her at that time in her life. She needed change. So instead she moved 6 hours east to Unity College in Maine, which has a very similar ethos to Starling. Unity's website says, "Unity is a liberal arts college with an important mission, to be the best environmental college in the world." There, she decided to train to become a wilderness guide, making her love for the outdoors her livelihood. She intended to eventually run retreats for other women who had been affected by sexual abuse and trauma, just like her. She thought nature was healing, which makes her fate all that more upsetting. Once at Unity, Lolly decided to join Woods Women as an intern for the summer. Woods Women is a non-profit outdoor recreation program in Minnesota, and Lolly was put in charge of canoe trips. And it was on one of these trips that she would meet Julianne Williams, who was just Julie to everyone who knew her. The two shared a tent with another woman and would spend all night every night talking, laughing and bonding. And they soon realised their feelings for each other transcended friendship. It wasn't long until Julie and Lolly were in a relationship, with Lolly finally feeling comfortable with her life and who she was. She returned to Unity and received a 4.0 average for her last semester. Her life was finally back together and everything had clicked into place. Julie, it seems, had a bit more of a struggle with her sexuality, being raised deeply Christian in St. Cloud, Minnesota. From what I've been able to learn about Julie, I'll describe her as the overachiever type, and in many ways probably the opposite of Lolly. By the time she'd finished high school, Julie had spent time volunteering at a women's shelter, she'd performed plenty of community service work, and she'd even won the Minnesota State Doubles Tennis Championship. She spoke fluent Spanish and attended Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota, where she studied geology. Julie loved learning and researching with a real eye for details. In 1993, she went to Greek Macedonia with a number of other students to study there, looking at the relationship between the ancient Greeks and how they lived on the landscape. Then she went to Italy to study the extinction of dinosaurs and she fell in love with the Italian countryside. As someone who loved to look at every single little detail, someone who had to understand everything, it only made sense that Julie was starting to question who she was. After dating men throughout college, it never quite felt right, and she started to question her sexuality, suspecting that she'd much rather be with women. After graduating from college summa cum laude, she decided to take a year to explore herself, wanting to move somewhere where she could do this and live a little bit more freely. So Julie decides to move to Richmond, a small but not hostile town in Vermont, where she lived in an apartment with a friend downtown and worked in a bookshop. She started using her time to discover who she was, finding a community of lesbian women in the area and forming a group with them called Church Ladies. She wanted to find a way to configure her sexuality with her religion. She was deeply religious but didn't want to feel excluded because of who she loved. She didn't want to have to forfeit her love of God for love of anyone else. Her reverend told journalist Barry Yeoman, her hands weren't tied, her mind wasn't tied. She knew how to ask the right questions in terms of struggling with what she was going to do with her life, in terms of career, in terms of her sexuality. She seemed very open and searching. One summer, being the lover of the outdoors that she was, Julie decided to attend Woods Women, and the rest is history. She met Lolly and finally knew who she was. But of course it wasn't easy, both of them were new to lesbianism and they had to tread carefully, figure out how they were going to proceed with their relationship. Lolly told her closest friends, but Julie was a bit slower to come out and neither of them told their parents. They didn't even live in the same state, how were they going to make this work? They would write each other long letters constantly and every few weeks, one of them would drive to the other, where they would sometimes stay at home and relax, or sometimes go off on adventures together, camping in the country, where they could truly be themselves. Soon, true to the lesbian stereotype, they decided it was time to move in together, and they found a house in Huntington, Vermont, and Julie had recently got a new job in the state, in the area. But first, to celebrate, they were going to go on a mega hike together through the Shenandoah National Park, past the Southern Appalachian Ridge. The park stretches more than 100 miles along the Blue Ridge Mountains, it's about 27 miles from Washington DC, and almost 200,000 acres of land with 500 miles of hiking trails, a dream for experienced hikers and backpackers like Lolly and Julie. They planned their route through the mountains carefully, starting on May 19th, 1996, and planning to be back by the 28th, and Lolly's dog Taj was joining them for the journey. Julie promised a friend that she'd be back in time for her wedding on June 1st, but she'd never make it. When on the 28th of May, Julie didn't make contact with her father, Thomas Williams, as planned, he became concerned. When a couple more days passed and he still didn't hear anything, he decided to report them as missing on the 31st of May. That same day, park rangers headed out to look for the couple. First, they came across their car parked near a hotel called Skyland Lodge, and then it didn't take too long until they came across Taj, alive and completely unharmed but without a lead, close to a campsite. The deputy chief ranger at Shenandoah said, "We started doing hasty searches to cover all of those trail corridors in that general area to see if we could locate them. At some point during those hasty searches, we did locate the dog." It wasn't until the next day, the 1st of June, that searchers sadly came across the bodies of Julie and Lolly, about half a mile from where their car was parked. They didn't announce the discovery immediately, waiting for 36 hours, which prompted outrage as so many other people were in this park and possibly at the risk of a killer. But the acting park superintendent referred to it as a single isolated incident. The National Park Service lead investigator, Tim Alley, said that the body of Julie was found along with her sleeping bag and sleeping pad approximately 30 to 40 feet away from the tent down a small embankment. She'd been gagged and her hands were bound with duct tape. Lolly was found inside the tent, also gagged and hands bound with duct tape, although it seems that that tape had first been used to tape Julie's mouth. Her ankles had been tied with a pair of long thermal underwear. Both of their throats had been slit and both women were found partially undressed but not sexually assaulted. There was no semen found at the scene. They were found at a very popular point within the park, but thanks to rules which said that hikers had to camp away and out of sight from the designated trails, nobody came across their bodies.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I found conflicting information on how long it was suspected they'd been there. Some sources stated 24 to 30 hours, others say a number of days. Some say they died on the 24th of May. At the campsite, a camera was found with plenty of photos of their hike along the White Oak Canyon Trail. They would have first stopped at Pinnacle's Overlook on Skyline Drive before heading out on the trail. It rained for 2 whole days of their trip, but that didn't deter them. They climbed Hawksbill, the park's highest peak, before that night deciding to camp half a mile off Skyline Drive, not too far from the Appalachian Trail, which is where they would die. The fact that their dog, Taj, was found alive and unharmed has thrown confusion into this case for some. I mean, you would think that most potential attackers would be put off by a dog, not knowing how violent or likely to be protective that dog would be. Taj would likely have sounded off some kind of alert, a bark, but I did see speculation online that maybe the killer had befriended the woman earlier in the day and perhaps the dog was comfortable in his company. That is just pure speculation though, we don't know that. With how far they were camping off the trail, there is the chance that Taj did bark though, but nobody was around to hear it. I do think it takes a very unusual type of killer to kill 2 women, but not decide to also kill the dog. There's some psychology there. The fact that this crime happened in a national park meant that it fell under federal jurisdiction. It was up to the FBI to conduct the investigation in conjunction with the National Park Service and Virginia State Police. And it must be said that it seems they did really do their due diligence with this case, doing everything they could to find answers. But the truth is, there was just nothing to be found at the scene of the crime. In 1996, the year this happened, 1.57 million people visited Shenandoah National Park. And this happened the weekend after Memorial Day, so the trails would have been really busy with hikers and sightseers making the most of the holidays. That's a lot of footsteps, a lot of DNA, and a lot of people to track down for answers. But at least one of that 1.57 million knows the truth about what happened to Julie and Lolly that night. It seems that this was just a murder for murder's sake. They didn't have much worth stealing, and there was no evidence of sexual assault. So of course, most people jumped to the conclusion that this was a bias crime, a hate crime, as the women were lesbians. As I mentioned earlier in the video, neither Lolly nor Julie were completely out at the time of their deaths, particularly to their families. Immediately, rumours began that the couple were gay, which was more scandalous in the 90s than it would necessarily be now, and journalists began contacting people close to them to find out. One of those people was Reverend Rebecca Strader, Julie's Reverend at Christ Church Presbyterian in Burlington. Rebecca made a decision which many would find controversial and confirmed to the media that the two were indeed a couple, deciding that she had a wider duty to the community, especially to the gay community, to keep them safe in the case that this was a hate crime. According to the article in Out magazine, which I would highly recommend you read by the way, it will be linked down below, she asked herself, "Once Julie was gone, was it my responsibility to keep her parents comfortable, or was it my responsibility to the whole community?" But of course, both sets of parents were upset about hearing something so personal about their daughters through the media, especially if the girls hadn't decided to tell them themselves. It would have come out sooner or later though, because there was no avoiding it. Investigators had to seriously consider whether or not they died due to their sexuality because of a hate crime. Homophobia was a plausible motive for this. People are killed for being part of the LGBTQ plus community every single day. However, it is pretty much impossible to pin down a hate crime motive in a case like this without a suspect's confession and word that it was. This could have been somebody who saw two women alone and vulnerable setting up camp in a quiet part of the park and knew this could be their time to strike, striking just because they were female. This person could have gone to the park with the intention of murder and Lolly and Julie were the poor victims chosen. Or it could have been that a homophobe saw them kiss or touch on the trail and got enraged. With nothing explicitly stating the motive here, we don't know what it was. Even the FBI say nothing has been taken off the table, saying it could potentially be a hate crime because of them being a young couple, or it could be a crime of opportunity. If you remember back a few months, I filmed a video on the Colonial Parkway murders, the murders of at least 8 people, couples, between 1986 and 1989 by an apparent serial killer along the Colonial Parkway, which is a road running across a portion of Virginia from Jamestown through Williamsburg all the way to Yorktown. It's an incredibly scenic road running for 23 miles. The case of the Colonial Parkway murders is still unsolved, but some people have made interesting connections between that and the case of Julie and Lolly. To start with, Shenandoah National Park is only 144 miles away from Colonial Parkway, about a 2.5-hour-ish drive, which here in the UK would be way too far apart to consider cases related, but that's practically neighbours by USA standards. Two of the victims of the Colonial Parkway murders were Kathleen Thomas and Rebecca Dowski in 1986, another lesbian couple who were murdered in a very similar way to Julie and Lolly, with both of their throats slashed and rope burns on their wrists and neck. Once again, there was no evidence of robbery or sexual assault. And that's not an MO that you find all too often, and for it to happen twice 10 years apart in relatively the same area, that's suspect. A lot of people suspect it was the same person responsible for both. But of course, with no evidence of the killer in either case, there's no way of knowing at this point. But the FBI did, of course, look into this possible connection. There actually was a pretty good suspect in Julian Lolley's case, though, to the point that he was even arrested in 2002. In July 1997, the year after Lolley and Julie were murdered, a woman called Yvonne Malbasha was cycling on Skyline Drive in the National Park, there on holiday from Canada with a friend. On the bike ride, she'd managed to get separated from her friend, but she wasn't too concerned, she knew she'd find her again. But then suddenly, a man in a truck drove towards her, driving so close that she fell off her bike to the side of the road. The man was called Daryl David Rice, and he'd been following Yvonne for a while, watching her cycle down the access road alone. He was apparently extremely angry, shouting sexual obscenities and even throwing a soda can at her. He attempted to grab Yvonne's chest and attempted to get her into his truck, but she threw her water bottle at him and managed to use her bike to block him. As she attempted to run away, he tried to run her over with his truck multiple times, demanding that she get in. Eventually, he just gave up and drove away, but was later found and detained by park rangers. They found hand and leg restraints hidden inside his truck, and he changed his clothes and reattached the license plates he'd removed while stalking Yvonne. This was a premeditated attempted abduction. Yvonne was able to identify Rice as her attacker, and he was subsequently convicted and given a 135-month sentence, spending 11 years in prison. He'd had no previous criminal record, but had been fired from his job just a few months earlier because he was extremely hostile, yelling sexual profanities at co-workers, punching holes in the walls, stealing lunches, and even taking down pictures of women to throw in the trash. Rice wasn't immediately a suspect in Julian Lolley's case, but he was described by prosecutors as being anti-gay and incredibly sexist towards women, making comments such as women are more vulnerable than men and that he hates gays. Interviews with him after his arrest slowly led investigators to believe that he could have been complicit in Julie and Lolly's death, especially when he apparently commented that they deserved to die because they were lesbian whores. I don't think it was a huge leap for investigators to think it could have been him. Further investigation into Rice's potential involvement found that he'd actually entered Shenandoah National Park at Royal Front at 8:05 p.m. on May 25th and then again at 4:57 p.m. on May 26th. He then returned with friends again on June 1st. In questioning, he admitted to the June 1st trip but denied ever being in the park on the 25th and 26th of May. In 1999, the FBI sent an undercover agent into the prison where Rice was serving his time and taped their conversations. He admitted that he'd only ever engaged in two sexual relationships with women and that he was inadequate sexually, substituting hardcore pornography for real relationships.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
With this circumstantial evidence, it was announced on April 10, 2001, that Daryl David Rice was to be indicted in the murders of Julie Williams and Lolley Winans. He was charged with 4 counts of capital murder for intentionally selecting and murdering the 2 young women because of his hatred of women and homosexuals. His motive was his hatred, and the killings were apparently part of an ongoing scheme or MO to assault, intimidate, injure, and kill women because of their gender. Interestingly, up until this point, legislation around hate crimes in the USA mostly dealt with crimes against race, religion, and ethnicities, not those who were targeted because of their sexual orientations or gender identity. This was a huge concern. The gay community just wasn't protected under the law. However, after the murders of Lolly and Julie, the Local Law Enforcement Enhancement Act came into play, making the LGBTQ plus community much more protected. The legislation cites this case as an example of tragedies that can happen when people are judged based on sexuality or gender. And when it came round to Rice's indictment, this case would actually be the first to be tried as a hate crime, so it all came around full circle. However, the charges against him just didn't stand up. In October 2003, prosecutors discovered an additional hair had been found on the duct tape used to bind Lolly's wrist, which was then subject to new DNA testing. Frustratingly, this testing proved that the chances were that Rice was not the killer. The hair belonged to another unknown male. Before that point, the only DNA found at the crime scene had been mitochondrial DNA found on the cloth ligatures. This type of DNA was able to prove that the perpetrator was male, but not much more than that. But as a result of this new evidence, all the prosecution had was their circumstantial evidence, and there's no way the defence wouldn't be able to effectively fight that in court. On the 25th of February 2004, the judge dismissed this case without prejudice, which at least means that Rice could still be charged with this at a later date. Some investigators are still convinced Rice was involved in this in some way. His secret trips into the park on the evenings of the 25th and 26th are too suspicious to ignore, but they can't find any solid evidence to support their claim. Interestingly, more forensic testing in this case failed to rule out a known serial killer in the area, Richard Mark Evonitz, who killed three girls in Fredericksburg in 1996 and 97. Through this testing, the hairs weren't confirmed to belong to him, but he just couldn't be ruled out, if that makes sense. Again, frustratingly, he killed himself in 2002 as the police closed in on him. Lolly's ex-fiancé was also asked to take a polygraph test after investigators suspected the crime could have been committed by someone close to them, but he was ultimately ruled out. A $50,000 reward was offered for any information leading to the killer, and in the immediate aftermath, Julie's parents held a press conference to ask for the media's assistance in finding the killer. The National Park Service, Virginia State Police, and the FBI conducted a nationwide search for this killer, including following up on 15,000 different leads. But the case remains unsolved, and as far as I can tell, there's been no big leads in a long time, so the search continues. The most recent article on this case I could find was actually published on CBS19news.com on June 1st this year, so only a couple of weeks ago. That's a great sign that this case hasn't been forgotten. Julie and Lolly haven't been forgotten. The FBI are still actively trying to get in new leads and information about this case. They very recently updated the Seeking Information posters with additional photos of the pair, and they're urging people to share these posters far and wide. I'll have these posters linked down below in case anybody would like to share. 5 years ago, the FBI reached out to the public to help solve the case, and they asked anyone who may have been in the national park at the time of the murders to come forward with any information at all, anything. They understand that the park attracts visitors from all across the country, even visitors from abroad, which means that the person who might have the key to unlock this entire case could be living anywhere in the country. Anyone with any information is asked to contact their local FBI office. No piece of information is deemed insignificant in this case. Anything could be the key to bring closure for Julie and Lolly's families. Whoever committed such a brutal murder such as this doesn't deserve to be walking the streets, and somebody must know something. Like I said, the Seeking Information posters will be linked down below in case you want to share those on any of your social medias. The FBI are still actively looking into this case. This is open, this is an active case. Anything could be of any help. Thank you so much for watching, and I will see you in the next one. Bye, guys.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.